This week on RSBNB Update, Fort 4 and 3 begins next week with new foundations. It will bring new construction training methods and training hubs. It's also been 10 years since the old school RuneScape poll, and we look back on the impact it's had on RuneScape as a whole. This is RSBNB Update, episode 921, recorded Thursday, February 9th, 2023. Dukely Deeds. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, we have news of what next week's update is going to be. But we'll get to that in just a little bit. Tanis, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week is Sirion.
Hello.
And of course, you guys might think that we brought Sirion on here just to split the logs, so to speak, regarding the upcoming Fort 4 and 3 update. But we're also this week going to be diving into a bit of a retrospective on the old school RuneScape poll, because believe it or not, it was 10 years ago next week that they put up the poll about whether or not old school would exist. And we want to have a little bit of a talk about that and see what that means for the greater aspect of RuneScape and Jagex as a whole. So that'll be after our Fort 4 and 3 segment. But if you're joining us for the first time, follow along in our show notes at update.show. You can also join us in our friends chat, Bits Bytes. We have a Discord too at rsbnb.com/discord. Tanis can be found in game at Tanis79. I am Shane12088, and Sirion is just Sirion in game. So
Because why be difficult?
Why have dumb numbers at the end of our names, right?
Exactly.
You know, I tried to get the name Shane once, but it was not available. So that's a little bit unfortunate, but in Tanis, you can say that out loud. I don't know why you're holding that in, and you're texting me about that.
Because you cracked me up with your log splitting comment.
Okay. Yeah, because you need to split logs to get planks. So
yeah.
Anyways. But as I mentioned, we're going to discuss old school after the announcements of the new foundations, Fort 4 and 3 update. Fort 4 and 3 is, of course, the name of the story chapter. We'll be getting a quest next month on this. I know me and many others in Clan Quest were wondering if we were going to open up with the quest this month, but it's just going to be a mini quest to unlock this. And the idea behind new foundations is that just a little bit south of the wilderness where the old sawmill used to reside, that's where the fort is going to be built with this. And the way it goes is that, according to King Rold, anybody who can claim back land from the wilderness and defend it will become a duke, duchess, or dux. And we're just going to, this week, go through what we can expect from this update. We'll have all the numbers and the XP numbers next week. Yeah.
Shane.
Yeah.
This isn't an established title scam, is it? Did someone check King Rold and make sure he has the authority to do this? Because I'm not getting scammed again.
When did you get scammed previously?
Well, I heard established titles was a scam.
I'm sorry, I don't get this reference. Sirion, do you get this reference?
No, this is a thing. This is a thing. I think it's in the UK. You can, pay to get, like, a piece of land, and you get a title, and...
Yeah, like, yeah. One foot of land, they plant a tree in Scotland, and then you can be called a lord or lady.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But it turns out, I don't think it was... There was a lot of blowback.
That sounds like that would be a scam.
I believe there's even like a piece of land that the government holds, because in the UK at least, because like if you're in Commons, I think you always have to be present. You can't like go like leave. Unless you hold like a piece of land because you're like a nobleman. I don't know. I don't know the details.
But
like,
yeah, it makes sense.
It's a piece of land. There's like a slip of paper saying you own this little.
Yeah,
land.
Land title, right?
A land title that they pass around for convenience so that they can circumvent the law. And I absolutely love it.
So is this what this is going to be about then after so we solve the murder?
Give us a title.
Oh, I see. Okay. Fair enough.
What a deed to the land on this fort. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, make sure it's actually ours. And, you know, this is supposed to be a fresh onboarding point for people. It will have some additional requirements. It won't be, you know, completely that you don't need to do anything to get into the story. And what they said in the live stream, we're going to be kind of referencing the live stream for parts of this, is that you can look at Elder God Wars as being the success of integrating combat and questing. And this is going to be Fort 4 and 3 is going to attempt to do the same thing, except integrate skilling and questing.
I like that combat is not in that list of items.
Yeah, except it would be if you're reading my notes, because I apparently made a typo on that. Whoops. I said it was going to integrate skilling and combat, but we already have tons of that in-game. But the next question that came up, and I think the logical question that we need to kind of answer at this point before we get too much into the fort, is why not a player-owned house rework? And the answer to this one was a simple one that was put out there. It's a huge scale difference in terms of the kind of project that they're talking about, whereas this can fit in terms of a skill update, whereas reworking the POH would have effectively been rebuilding most of construction. And the whole goal of this skill update is to fix the problems that we have in the construction skill of not having viable training methods and useful rewards in the skill.
Yeah, I mean, this is a new kind of training method, right? Like this would have been, if you look at our bits in the past of how to rework a skill, this would fall under that medium, you know, new methods, right? Like
without rebuilding the skill entirely, like mining and smithing. So,
it makes a little sense, but of course, it doesn't really remove the problem of the existing content, right? It just kind of
you know, says, hey,
it sweeps it under the rug and is like, yeah, let's just pretend that part of the skill doesn't exist. Like, this is what you should be looking at. Like, this is the training stuff.
Yeah, this is going to have training unlocks from 1 to 99.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know, like... I understand the arguments, but I'm a little bit disappointed at the same time.
Yeah.
It feels like something to keep us, you know, happy and busy without really tackling some of the bigger problems.
Yeah, because this is going to be entirely independent of the fort itself, because first things, you still have your POH that, at this point, what rooms are useful in the POH?
The aquarium.
Armor stand and your...
So the workshop.
Altar, maybe?
There's an answer to the altar here, a slightly different angle on it. So, and then there's the powder burials as well.
Difference is, though, at the POH, you can't train, right? I mean, you can. We've been forced to, but ideally, this is going to be legit training versus,
and
you know, our workaround training that we would do in the POH.
Exactly, of building furniture and removing it.
Yeah.
And the other thing they said with this is that it is not instanced. And when they started talking about the environment in it, which Mod Blackwitch and team was a part of on this, they built it as such so that it can be non-instanced, but the same blocked out areas are blocked out whether you're at a tier one building or the highest tier building, so that you're not going to have people running through your table in your fort, so to speak, with that. So,
mm-hmm.
I think the I think this is going to be another one of those modern RS updates that when you look at the execution of it, it's going to feel very polished around the edges. And of course, that's a hypothesis at this point. We'll have to wait and see how it feels when it arrives on Monday. Also in the live stream, they said from the point of view, it's very important that the player builds the fort and the player builds the entirety of the fort. And there was questions in the live stream. Well, if that's the case, why is there still, you know, some base items there at the framework? And they said, well, that just had to be a technical constraint on that when they laid that all out. There'll also be a mini quest to start this off, which I think is fine. I think we can all get behind that when we head to the workshop and the fort next Monday. And before we get into the buildings, we get 4 buildings to start off with, and there's going to be more buildings added throughout the year or throughout the storyline. How do we feel about that?
I mean, I think we should really start looking at this as the replacement for the construction skill, right? Oh. Like, POH is dead, right? Just screw POH. It's no longer a thing. And this is just a new thing, right? Like, new buildings, you build stuff. You don't build furniture anymore, but you still build up sort of your own little base. It's based on your construction skill. You get benefits out of it. And, you know, I'm still a little bit worried. Like, I feel like they're giving you a lot for rewards. And sure, some of the big benefits might come with a 99 construction requirement, but still, you know, if you compare this to most other skills, you're getting a lot out of this at basically no cost.
Yeah, like there's no upkeep cost.
Yeah, exactly. Like, archaeology changed the game on combat in some ways, and also, you know, some of the skills, like no more sick herbs, dropping all your memories in the rift in one go. Like, they're big, big changes. But at least, you know, you could only have 3 of those effects active. And if you wanted to change, they cost chronotes. And also, you needed to unlock them first. This feels very, you know,
Remo Totem.
Yeah, exactly. It feels very Remo Totem for, like, the entire world. That being said, you know, if you think about the benefits that construction gave at launch, comparatively, you know, it introduced the altars, it introduced teleport tablets, it introduced the workshop, it introduced the teleporting portals, right? Like, in that context, the POH was a huge deal back in the day.
Yeah, and those things kind of got power crept as time went
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And this is maybe just reestablishing construction as the thing that gives you all of these benefits. I'm a
and
little
if that's
bit sad.
What the, and if that's what the construction skill is going to do, maybe that's its identity. Go ahead.
That is its identity. I'm a little bit sad that you get no choice in what you get. Like, you get everything. I think it would be interesting if this were more going in the direction of the invention machines, where you sort of, you have so many hotspots and you can't get everything. But, you know, given that you can't visit someone else's fort, maybe that's why they decided that this was necessary.
Yeah, we'll kind of dive into all this. I just want to say one thing in that for the people who were around when RS2 came out, and this is actually an interesting tidbit of history, they wanted to do carpentry before RuneScape 2. They wanted to do it in Classic, but the engine couldn't accommodate it. So that, and amongst many other things, including the instancing that built farming and whatnot, was part of the reason they moved to RS2. And even when construction did launch for RS2, they still put everything inside instanced player-owned houses. And Andrew's initial idea was to actually have construction on the surface world just like we see here. I feel like that needs to be said as well.
I mean, if you're ever wondering why Falador and Farrokh and Ardoin, to some extent, kind of have these weird empty houses in some places.
Yep.
That's why. Like, they were meant to be the player-owned houses. So East Falador, Southeast Farrokh, and I don't know, random places in Ardoin, I guess.
Tanis, where do you land on this discussion about modernizing construction and just adding to it?
Well, in general, I'm very much in favor. Construction, probably my favorite skill, or at least a very close number two. And if this update, I only want one thing. Everything else is gravy. But give me one viable post-99 training method that does not involve prawn brokers, and I'll be a happy guy. Really happy guy. Because that's arthritis and it just waiting to happen. But I think Theron brings up a good point. Construction did have rewards back in the day. It was viable for a time. It's only through power creep that it has become less and less, useful. And I don't see anything wrong with bringing that back in.
I don't think there's anything wrong in giving good rewards for skill. It's just if you compare this to some of the other stuff we have out there, like the Max Guild, for example, feels absolutely shite in comparison.
Right, and that's the funny part. There was a live stream last week or the week before, and one of the questions was, when are we going to get additions to the Max Guild, including an invention bench? Oh, that's coming.
Never, ever.
With the fort.
Yeah, no, exactly. And in a way, I think it shows perhaps the idea of the Max Guild is just outdated. It's kind of nice that you can sort of build up the benefits that you go along and level up your construction. But at the same time, the vast majority of players have 99 construction. They're going to get the benefits as soon as they can afford all the materials, and that's going to be it. So
yeah, let's go through the buildings then. Of course, XP and whatnot will be saved for next week. So starting off, we have the workshop, and this is the core building. And with this, this is where you'll process construction materials. It has the sawmill and stone cutter for processing raw materials into the building blocks that will be used at the fort. There were people selling limestone bricks for huge amounts of money on the Grand Exchange after they saw this, when in reality, you can just go and buy those from the merchants. So people always make a quick buck on that. And the workshop is the one that gives you remote access to invention machines and increases the amount of power that your invention machines can use. So looking at the workshop with this, it gives also a 5% buff to hotspot construction XP in the fort. And it's got I don't know if you saw this on the live stream, Tanis, it's got kind of like a rock opportunity kind of method, where you'll get more XP if you actively follow along the glowing construction sites.
We'll have to see just how much they glow.
Yeah.
Is it a bit like the time spirit?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Where it moves. Yeah. 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 And then at tier 2 is when you get remote access to the invention machines, a 10% buff to hotspot construction XP in the fort, up from 5. And then at tier 3, it increases your machine power by 25% and the 15% buff to construction XP in the fort. And there's an important thing that needs to be noted with this one, is that you will still be capped to a maximum of 2 alchemizers with this. So they are balancing it in such a way that you won't be able to add in a third alchemizer, because from our economic data we saw at the start of the year, yeah, alchemizers are the main source of GP flowing into the game. So just a note on that. The next building that we'll talk about is the chapel, and this is prayer training here with other players, designed to be a social prayer training method, communal burners that give buffs, and it's not an XP buff like you have in the POH. And with this, the buffs actually give you a chance to make it so that your bones or your ashes won't get used. So at tier one, you get 250% XP on the altar and 15 seconds per herb of burner time. Tier two is 300% XP boost and 18 seconds per herb. And then tier three goes up to 350% and 21 seconds. And it also allows you to swap your prayer books at the altar. But I mean, let's be honest, if you have curses unlocked, there's a very low chance that you switch to anything but curses. And I think this is going to be an interesting way of going because it makes it so that rather than lighting the herbs to keep the XP boost up, you're lighting the herbs to give you a chance of not utilizing or not using up those bones and ashes. And we'll have to just wait and see how prolific that is, because that could be an entirely different method of prayer training based on the numbers with that. They said XP-wise, it won't displace the Powder of Burials, because with that, you just activate that and then just spam berry with that. So, how do you guys feel about the chapel? Which one of the two do you like the most so far, chapel or workshop?
Look, well, I remember the days where we still had the house parties with the guild altars, and yeah, you know, to me that gives a community sense within a game like RuneScape. So, you know, I kind of like the chapel idea. I hope it brings people back in like one place to pray, train prayer. It's gonna be a party town there during a double XP.
Yeah, because you can also. And I don't know if you caught this, Tanis, you can actually place portables and whatnot in that area. So this could be a new portable hub.
Oh yeah, it sounds really nice. I didn't hear you say anything about an armor stand though in the workshop, which
no, there is no armor stand.
Which is kind of.
No, I mean, in some ways that's good because then that gives you a reason to go back to your own workshop.
It doesn't completely
wipe out the POH.
Yeah, I mean.
Next up is the command center. With this one, this is the one that we were talking about earlier, and it reads as, you no longer need to travel to the realm of Miscellany on foot, or Anachronia, or your ports, or your archaeology research teams.
I find it so funny because, like, Miscellania, you literally have a teleport into the throne room. Archaeology, you have like a free teleport on the book to basically right next to the exam center.
Yeah,
such a small deal to go there.
And this was actually asked in the live stream. You know, does this reduce the need to explore the game? And Mod Jack said that, you know, this will be for players who have already discovered these areas, who already have these teleports, and this just removes the need to teleport to these certain places sometimes. You'll still need to go to ports sometimes. You'll still need to go to Miscellania sometimes. The way it works with Miscellania is that it will be able to hold your progress for 7 days, so you only need to go there once every 7 days to top up your progress if that's how you play Miscellania. So it doesn't completely negate the need to go there, but
we'll see about that.
Yeah.
If they think I was an absentee landlord before, you ain't seen nothing.
Well, I mean, the answer to this is to find a way to get us another Miscellany quest.
Yeah, that's true.
I just love the idea of there being like in the command center, like, Duke, is there anything we can do for you? Yes, there's this country I'm king of. Can you take care of that for me as well, please? Like, okay, sure.
But here's the fun part. In addition to the remote access, you also get a 3% success bonus for ports voyages, which is wonderful if you're finishing up those multi-character ports voyages that just fail too much.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people complain about it, so, you know, fair enough. I didn't find them an issue, but I kind of like them either. So.
Yeah.
At tier two, you get 5 additional Anachronia workers and a 3% cost bonus for archaeology research. And at tier three is where you get the Miscellania rep boost and holding max reputation for 4 days. The ports chance increase goes up to Or no, it's an additional. These are additives, so it's 3, 3, and 4 for a total 10%.
Yeah, 10 total. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I didn't know it was additive. That's neat. 10% chance. 10 Anachronia workers and 3% research speed bonus.
This is good for my main, but I can't wait to let the other account loose on this.
That's exactly what I thought.
So you get to Anachronia pretty early, right? On a fresh account, I think.
Oh yeah, you can go there on day one.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which means that, you know, because the only thing that you get, like, you need to wait for it to upgrade the base camp is time, right? Like, my base camp is fully upgraded. I have no use for the workers anymore. If the workers only come in quite late on construction, like, it feels like a bit of a not very useful buff. Like, it's nice. I'll take it. But
this would have made a huge difference on fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Well, maybe we'll get another, you know, seasonal game mode, and people will be all over this.
You know, this construction update makes me want to boot the skill pier back up again.
That's what I'm talking about.
A boot. Nice try. And then comes the town hall. This is built to be the place where you can, quote, relax and unwind after a long day of adventuring, or maybe even meet some interesting characters. Here you will accumulate a pool of rested experience, and this is a new method to help you skill. As you work away in the fort, or when you are offline, you will build up a pool of rested XP that can be traded for bonus XP in any skill that you choose. The pool will grow bigger with each upgrade to the town hall. And on top of that, building the town hall will give you access to a bank NPC in the main courtyard of the fort. So this is what we were talking about that will make portable scaling, amongst other things, the place to do it here in the fort.
Okay. But I'm not the only one who immediately made the parallel, like the comparison with like these idle games, right, on phones. Where you can,
I've never played one, so I didn't make that comparison.
You can like these games, right? Like they're sort of idle, like Cookie Clicker, right? Like, and basically they give you sort of a maximum pool of, you know, offline progress you can get. So to make sure, you have to open the game or the app like at least twice per day, right? Like that's how that works. This feels like very much the same. Like it feels like such a mobile strategy. We're like, oh yeah, you can bank up experience while you're offline automatically, but you better log in twice a day to make sure you can, you know, get it all because there's a cap. Like that's a little bit how it feels like.
And well, it got me then because I want it.
And to be fair, we did talk about, I think last year at some point, updates of the future building in mobile play mechanics to them.
Well, yeah, no, this is like immediately I was like, that's, you know, mobile strategy.
Yeah. So with this, it's 1% of a small star generated per 15 minutes logged out from anywhere, and 1% of a small star for every 3 minutes of skilling in the fort, and this is a 5-lamp cap.
Yeah, tier, I mean, two, honestly, that's like, like you said, 1% per 3 minutes offline, right?
Yeah, per 15 minutes logged off. Oh, yeah.
So that's basically like that's 24 hours. That's basically a day per lamp, right? So, you know, I think the maximum gives you what, 7 lamps? That's like a week. If you play once a week, you get all the small lamps. So,
5-lamp camp for tier one, 10 for tier two, and 15 for tier three.
So that's 2 weeks. You go on vacation for 2 weeks and come back to 14 small stars, which are absolutely nothing if you think about it. Yeah. So,
and then the rate at which you get small stars for skilling in the fort goes up 2%, 3% for tier two and tier three.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like compared to like urns or effigies, it's so minimal.
Yeah, it is, and it's just a little bit on the edge to kind of say, hey, if you're gonna be doing this the AFK skilling, do it here in the fort. So
yeah, like if you really hate dungeoneering,
for example. But they're stars, not actual lamps.
Oh, damn!
I don't know why it says lamp cap then.
Yeah, but mix them stars with a few silverhawk feathers, and away we go. Never have to do another lap. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Sirion, you don't use bonus XP. Will this bonus XP be acceptable to you?
Oh, this is fine. I do use bonus XP. I don't know. I will probably not pick it up very often.
All right, fair enough. And with this, the way it goes, and just a little bit more on the actual construction aspect of it, buildings are permanent, tier 3, and with this, you can actually, we didn't mention this, that to continue actual construction skilling here, you reinforce the buildings. So it's not just build them once and done, and they don't decay, you can just keep reinforcing the buildings if that's how you choose to train construction.
And that's what I'm curious about. I want to see some
XP. We
got to
see what
rates,
the XP rates are going to be on that. Yeah. Yeah. Also with this, you're actually going to be able to make your own planks now without incurring a GP loss. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then where would we use them?
You use them here.
You use them, but I thought they weren't the same kind of hotspots.
No. So the example is that you would make a mahogany plank, and then you would turn those planks into refined planks. And then those get converted at a rate of 4-1. And then those planks then can be traded and made into wood frames that are the components needed for buildings.
Oh.
So it goes plank, refined plank, wooden frame.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So get your plank makers going this weekend if they are not going already.
I think mine are completely filled up with mahogany logs because I have not checked miscellanea in like a month.
Yeah, and then the question with this and the question with this is, are plank values gonna go up or plank values gonna go down with this? Depending on, I guess, where the XP sits for this, and how many people just want to sit in AFK here at the fort.
I do.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's going to change the equations on the plank maker potentially.
Yeah, whether or not it's useful to use, or do this AFK on mobile.
Yeah, so. Because mahogany planks were very profitable.
Yeah.
With the energy, but that might change. No, I think it's interesting. I really like the concept of, building construction materials. Just like Tanner said earlier, like the current training method of building furniture and then deleting it is just silly. And this feels, more appropriate. You're making construction materials. It's more than just, putting together a prawn broker and taking it apart again.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we move on, I just want to say also that there's a couple of fun little references in the news post here. We must construct additional pylons. That is truncated to walls. And Command and Conquer, Red Alert was the best one.
I mean, that we can agree with. So, yeah.
Let's see. Any other final tidbits here? When Mod Blackwitch and team was working on the environment, there's also now an option in here to be able to turn the season. So there will be different looks for fall, spring, winter, summer.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, and they all look wonderful. The comp cape requirement will be to build all buildings to tier 3, and we should be thinking of the fort as the infernal puzzle box for 2023. And that future content of this year will require the fort and will add on to the fort.
Yeah, the lumber mill is disappearing, so I'm actually quite curious where Fluffs will end up being.
They moved the cats to the apothecary.
Oh, so interesting.
Is the fort where the lumber yard used to be? Because that's not the Wildy.
No, it's just south of the wilderness there, and there's actually going to be a new lodestone to get there.
So this isn't going to be. So this isn't
wilderness. This is not in the wilderness. No.
Okay.
New lodestone. That's going to make the Earth Altar so easy to get to.
Earth.
Earth Altars.
Yeah.
Right next to there. Right. For some reason, I thought that was mine. That was right there. Okay.
No, mine is all the way up against the wilderness.
Right. I've been playing this game for 20 years, and I don't know where the base altars are. Anyways.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters. Then we're going to do patch notes. And next week will be a fun update diving into the Ford amongst other things. But this week in particular, I'd like to thank Alfie S., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Enrique V., Premilk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Ling01, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., Pernasius, Ricky A., RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, The Dabbin' Goat, Tim, Tom V., Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and if you're wondering what all this is about, you can check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. There you can support the podcast if you so choose to, for as little as $1 a month. And for that $1, you get access to an entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the most recent episode that we did about asking the question, what if drops from bosses were not rare in RuneScape? How would that work? And is it at all feasible? We also have other highlights, including Altscape, tier lists on skills, dailyscape, and bosses, just to name a few. All of that, 55 monthly bits available for as little as $1 a month. We also do have a VIP tier for $3 a month, where you'll get a special rank on our Discord, including chat channel access and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show, in addition to everything else. So if this sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. And yes, we still do have the ultra, ultra long goal. If and we ever hit $500 a month, Tana, Sirion, and myself will subject our taste buds to a huge range of spikes.
No, no, no. No, 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 no. I never volunteered for this.
It can't just be me and Tanis. Everybody else is trying to get out of it by saying they'll moderate or do something else to help.
No, no. I'm not involved with this. You set this goal. You can hurt yourself. I won't.
Oh, but if you want to help us get there, Tanis, myself, and maybe somebody else, patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everybody. It means the world to us. All right. We do have a small collection of patch notes this week. Starting off, fixed an issue that was causing items in the player's inventory to disappear after curing a farming patch. Also, corrected several misspellings of the word receive across the game. And at this point, it's important to remember that it's I before E, except after C, as they say. That's the way it goes, right, Mr. English tutor here?
I don't know. I know that there's rules like that, and then it turns out that more than half the words don't follow that rule. I've had to learn rules, and then there were more exceptions than things following the rule, and I'm like, why? Like, it's the same with, like, C is, like, S before whatever it is, and then there's like more exceptions than, like, make up your mind. Just no.
And a reason I say that is we were having a bit of a discussion about how Sirion is probably the one who has the best grasp of English here out of the three of us.
Written English, yes.
Yeah. And then made some minor changes to the duel system and PvP, so that dying in a duel outside of the wilderness should consistently result in a safe death. Yeah.
Solid.
So, Tanis, maybe your boxing slot machine thing was still in place and only the very, very small number of people actually knew that it was possible.
That's scary. That it might not have been safe.
And I was wondering, hey. I was wondering why you were so quiet when I was assigning Syria map to do hunt ones.
Yeah, no, I was totally like goating him into it, and no one heard a thing. That's a bummer.
All right. Next up, the damage cap was removed from the Aegis aura alongside the absorption rate being connected to the player's defense level. Now it's always going to be 10% with this. And, you know, I think the bigger thing is the 10% on this in terms of damage reduction, because previously it was an 80,000 damage absorbed cap with this, and as such, that would be 800,000 damage that you would need to absorb. And over the hour, I mean, it's not like you were going to hit that. So it's more, it's the thing to pay attention to in this part of the patch is that it's the damage reduction value not being connected to defense anymore. And then, of course, there's also at the same time, you question if you're going to use an Aegis Aura, right? Because at the same time, if you're doing PVM, you're going to be wanting to use a damage aura instead. So this is still kind of in a weird spot. I don't exactly know where you would want to do this if you're maximizing DPS. I mean, maybe if I was trying to further prolong that kill time at Zamorak, maybe. I don't know. Maybe this would have been the way to do it. That's actually a good idea. Maybe I should.
Not me, I don't know.
Maybe I should, you know, just see how long I can tank at bosses for. Maybe that should be my RuneScape PVM adventures.
There you go. Give it a shot.
Yeah, I don't know. And then a bunch of engine fixes that are just fixes. Not too much to write home about here. Not that many big changes here. Sirion, did any of these catch your eye in the engine area?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to old school then. And, you know, 10 years ago, there was the question of what was going to happen to RuneScape. And this resulted in old school RuneScape being pulled. And you know, I remember where I was and what was happening, with this, but let's just kind of set the table here a little bit about how we got to old school. So EOC had just launched in November of 2012, and the changes that would make RuneScape 3 started, being added into game. And, how active were both of you guys in late 2012 on RS? Do you guys remember when EOC launched?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, oh yeah.
I played, but I don't know. I was super active back in the day.
All right. And with this, ModJack actually said that these early RS3 changes on one of his live streams, it was a period where RuneScape was changed for the sake of changing it, trying to be something else with that. And you know, I remember looking at EOC, and I thought, oh, that's going to be interesting, because, you know, my problem with Slayer was that it was just, you know, exceedingly boring, go in and click on something and wait, and I thought this is going to change the way I see combat, and it's going to, you know, reinvigorate that, and I think it did, and I think we've proven numerous times on various episodes and monthly bits that EOC was definitely needed in the form that we have it now, but I was honestly flabbergasted when I learned that they were going to pull bringing back a version of the game from 2007. I was actually on vacation in New Zealand at the time, and I saw this news feed, and I wasn't... This was actually my first time stepping away from the podcast and letting other people handle it, so I had no idea what they were going to do on this, right? And I was at a point where I was like, I got to comment on this. I got to get these words out, and, you know, I think they had a good discussion on it, but at the same time, maybe it was good that I wasn't there, because I was absolutely furious that they were doing this. How do you guys feel, and what do you guys remember about the poll, if you guys remember the poll at all? How did you guys feel?
I felt the exact same way, and I also felt that it was a stolen election, and that they stuffed the ballot boxes with the counts that didn't actually play the game. And I was furious.
Yeah, and I think that was the prevalent opinion amongst people I was around with too, is that, you know, these are people coming back who haven't been playing for years, and now they're all voting in this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, it did happen. And it just felt so weird at the time. And I guess it shouldn't have, because the year prior, in 2011, they brought back the wilderness and free trade. But at the same time, RuneScape was trying to be something else. And it was very clear following EOC that there was a part of the community that wasn't for that. And I think with this, we always go back to the discussion, what if expectations had been managed? What if there had been clearer discussions and consultations? Yeah. What if they had done something like Revolution and Legacy Combat with EOC? Would we have had the blowback we did, and would old school have become a thing?
Yeah, they hadn't split the community, right?
Honestly, like, back in the day, I didn't do much combat, so I didn't really, I was, like, not super happy about, like, the release, but overall I thought it was an improvement, right? Like, NEI came out. No, NIS. NIS.
That was in July of 2013.
Was it the same year? I thought that came out together.
No, it was after.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so for a while we had EOC with a fixed UI.
I did not realize this.
Yeah, and that was rough. Oh man, that was rough.
But back in the day, it was like, overall, I think this is improvement. I thought the abilities were kind of cool. It was released rushed, and with the power of hindsight and now knowing more about game design, probably wasn't a great change either, right? Like, I accept that when they say, it was change for the sake of change. At the same time, they had to, I feel.
Right, because how could you have a game in 2012 that was going to have a combat system where you just click and wait?
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic, because that's what you do in most games these days. In mobile games.
And that's what we're doing now anyway.
Yeah, but like... No, exactly. So... I find it tough, but I think overall, like, I understand why people weren't happy. It wasn't a good system, but I think the reaction of Jagex to be like, well, fine, have the old game then, was maybe a bit too knee-jerk as well, so...
Yeah, and to be fair, this was a very early stage when they had just started communicating with the community. I don't even think we had proper CM at this point.
No, they were still pulling, from the website. And I also want to just, I just want to add to that, the reason that I was so against the OS pull was because even though they had tried to reassure us this wouldn't be the case, I flat out didn't believe it. And I thought anything that went to supporting OS would be taking away from development of RS3.
Oh, yeah.
And even back then, I remember seriously thinking about that and being like, no, that's not right.
Well, Gothic Sleeps was supposed to come out in February that year, but it was delayed by 2 weeks, probably for the OS stuff. Mm-hmm. We never got official confirmation on that, but the news post said that pretty much everybody who could was working to get OS out the door in late February.
Right, and that's what, I mean, I remember that being one of the major reasons I was kind of against OS at that time, was just because I'm like, so now I get less out of my money because someone's...
And that was the initial thing. The initial thought was that RS3 was subsidizing OS, which we know now that OS is the one that drives subscriptions and RS3 is the one that drives microtransactions.
Yeah.
Now, we've been talking about the poll, and the poll garnered 449,000 votes, which, if they kept to the initial metrics that they were supposed to, that would have been enough for a small team, maintenance, and possible anti-bot tech, but instead they opted for the full level 3 option, which was everything, no additional membership fee, a dedicated dev team, anti-bot tech, and of course new updates. If it hit 750,000 votes, it would have had, I forget what the other addition was on it, it would have had a free-to-play option. It would have had a free-to-play option. And then I think if you would have done that, then you would have really... had something that took on a life of its own if they would have made it had gotten enough votes for free to play on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a poll is a poll, right? They're done for optics, I think we have to say. Right? So we don't know, even today, 10 years later, how many of these people were playing the game actively. And I think if they would have limited it to people who had logged in since November that year, you would have had a different result. But they didn't want to do that.
No.
Because, and we're going to get into this, at the time, Jagex severely needed a way to, I want to say at its core was make themselves feel better regarding the negativity regarding EOC, but they also just needed something that the community wasn't necessarily going to be upset about, and Old School provided that venue for them.
Yeah, well, it was like, oh no, we accidentally cut off our finger. Oh, well, hold on to it. Here, let's put it in a jar with some water. Maybe we can keep that until we can reattach it later. And that finger became the part of the community that was severed with the EOC, and they were desperately trying to find a way to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, and I mean, at the same point in time, if you look at the player graphs going back to that point, RS3, until about 2015, maintained its dominance as being the one that had the most players, but after that, Old School eclipsed it. And then it further eclipsed it when Old School Mobile launched, and so on and so forth. And, you know, there's always, I feel like we also got to address this, that when you look at Old School, there's always the question of bots. And Sirion and I have been running around in the Old School world for about 2 or 3 weeks now. And have you seen any bots? Or people who at least look like bots?
Not obviously, no.
Yeah, not obvious bots.
And I don't think it's a bot issue. I think the reason it grew like that was, if you look at the timing, that's also the timing that Twitch was really starting to come in its own. RuneScape was starting to get a little tiny bit of a presence on the platform.
And that's the most bonkers thing of all, is that Old School Twitch is more popular than RS3 Twitch.
Yeah, because I mean, that was the cool thing with the cool people were doing.
I think it's also, you know, and this is something like limitation spawns creativity, right? RuneScape 3, if you look at it, the game itself is really trying to set the agenda. It's trying to set you on a certain path, set you on a certain course, you know, there's big storylines and trailers for these big releases and all that stuff, right? And if you look at Old School, it's much more laid back and chill in a sense. So people came up with their own challenges, right? Like Swampletics. Swampletics was one of the first big things. But now you get a lot of these modes that people are doing. Like there's this hardcore ultimate Iron Man thing where you can't even access the bank, right? There's this thing where you do tile buy, where you can move the number of tiles equal to your total level, things like that. You don't see that happening much in RS3 because I think, you know, it's much more about the update of the week and what that
update of the month now.
Update of the month. Yeah. Like that was much more about, you know, the game itself already provides a lot of content.
Comp, trim, master quest.
The difference. Like, RS3 is like getting a brand new remote control car. What are you going to do with that remote control car? You're going to drive it. It's going to be fun. And our OS is like getting a stick for your birthday. Cool. I got a stick. What am I going to do with it? I don't know. Go beat your brother. throw it. Play fetch with the dog. I don't know. You got a stick. Do anything you want. Play swords with it.
And I think that's also led into where we're at with going for Questscape on OS, and that we're using that stick to go for Questscape.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can do anything with the stick. It's just a stick.
Yeah.
Exactly. And honestly, it's kind of, I mean, it grasps the nostalgia, but like there's certain simplicity to the game, right? there's certain simplicity, and especially in the more recent years where RuneScape is... This is going to sound very negative, and I don't mean it that way, but it screams for your attention a little bit more, right? Like, you need to see through the treasure hunter pop up each time you log in and all that stuff. I don't want to even talk about microtransaction itself, right? Like, RS3 is, it's just a very different game. I don't know. Like, old school lends itself better to being a lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah. And
it sounds like Therion is saying that the OS is kind of like hipsters, but RS3 is thirsty. Very thirsty.
Maybe, yeah.
I see old school as being the kind of game you play if you're the kind of person who's interested in glacial incremental change. Because
I can't believe you don't have a maxed account on OS, Shane.
Because it took so long for them to start adding updates to it. And let alone when these updates are added, they need to pass the poll with 70% approval. And we're talking about not just, you know, updates. We're talking about patch notes that need to pass this. Unless it's a game balance, game health thing, it needs to pass that 70% approval. And, you know, this has led to warding being held back and not happening. And, you know, they tried a few times for a new skill, but they'll finally be getting a new skill this year in 2023. And I What?
Well, there's like this entire polling process. Like, there's a chance it won't happen, right?
Yeah. And for me, that in some ways is kind of... And Tanis, it's interesting you mentioned I don't have a maxed account, because I do like to take things incrementally, glacially. All my operating systems I use are long-term support operating systems if I can. I keep my phone for, you know, at least 3 generations, that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, from the game design perspective, warding was really, really interesting. And I think, and this is the part where Sirion and I come in, is that we would have preferred to have had that in RS3 rather than Invention at the time. And I think that's why it was something that was really disappointing when warding didn't pass. Because I think the writing was on the wall that if warding passed, I was going to try the game.
OS is basically the United States Senate, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just... It's set there to slow everything down and to make sure that nothing ever happens. And if it does happen, it means a lot of people's, a lot of people aligned to, for it to happen.
And maybe that's the RS player base in general, but go ahead.
Yeah, like in general, I feel that, It's there's this familiarity that people look for in old school, and it's kind of weird seeing how held back the game is in that context, to the point that I'm not. It almost feels like it should be a really poor business decision, but somehow it's working out.
Yes,
right? Like. It seems that whether that's on purpose or a stroke of luck, I don't know, but you know, it works.
Right. And in terms of business decisions like that, my question is, and I'm not deep enough in the OS side. I don't know the OS dev team. I don't know the management structure there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be interested to know, is old school bringing new players in who have never played RuneScape before? Sure, it's going to have its RS3 converts like us, and it's going to have its people who have been there since the beginning and have multiple accounts. But is it bringing in people who are new to the IP is a question I have with that.
See, I would only speculate that it can't be that much more successful at doing that than RS3, or you would see a push and an emphasis on that. right? Like you're going to
and we thought that was the case when they did mobile first, but OS mobile was done first because it was simpler technologically.
Right.
So, and when it comes to in general, I just want to make this note. I should have made this note earlier on old school content. We're not going to be discussing specific old school content here. We're just going to be in general looking back at what old school says about RuneScape and Jagex as a whole. And if you're interested in hearing about old school content, let us know, because Sirion and myself here are going for that Questscape on there, and we will be dabbling in all the old school content, including all the new and wonderful quests that have been added to the game. So if that sounds interesting to you, let us know. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You might be able to guess what that means if you know us here. But what was the state of RuneScape in 2013? And we kind of got into this with EOC, in that, you know, in reality, EOC wasn't that usable. It needed revolution. It needed queuing. It needed the trash known as momentum to be taken out to the garbage. It needed legacy mode. Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, momentum was garbage. I mean,
did it need legacy mode, though? That's a whole lot of discussion we can have, but...
But the point is, if you shipped EOC with Revolution, queuing, and Legacy mode, what would have happened?
It would have been a much better product, yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah. And I've talked about this in the first few weeks of Old School that we've been playing. I much prefer Legacy combat to the Old School combat for a couple of reasons. First reason being, and this is something I had to remember wrapping my head around, and tell me if you remember this, Tanis. If you have a rune sword or a rune dagger, that does less damage than a rune two-hander. And then you have to balance between whether scimitar or longsword, depending on whether you want the extra strength bonus or if you want the slash bonus. It makes it so that you need to know all the intricacies of the weapon type, and all of the rune weapons aren't going to deal the same amount of damage, wherein RS3... with Legacy Combat, they do, and I think that's a really nice thing. And then, you know, just
but
in
is
general,
it though? Like if you
really?
Compare it, right? Yeah. No,
I like
do.
The uniform nature of
sure,
the tiers.
It's uniform, but now you don't have to learn about the different weapons, but you have to learn about five times as many different abilities, and then we're not even talking about ability rotations, right?
Like, see, I wasn't thinking that. I was just thinking turn Legacy on and call it a day.
Yeah, if you want to go really simple, yeah. But that's the thing, right? Like, it replaced one complexity with a different complexity.
Yeah, and I remember, and I was talking to you about this, I remember having consistent debates of scimitar versus longsword. I was always on the longsword side, but other people were on the scimitar side. On
I
OS,
did what I was told, and I was always told scimitar, so...
Right. Which one did you use, Tanis, back in the day? Scimitar or longsword?
Longsword.
Okay. Yeah. And then to just kind of paint the picture of what RuneScape in 2012 looked like before EOC and before Old School came in, updates of 2012 looked like player-owned ports was added that year after EOC. We had quest reworks involving the signature heroes. The Gielinor Gabes took place that year. We had a major graphical and city rework of Alcarid. Bonfires were added that year.
Oof.
The rune span was added that year. We haven't talked about the need to train runecrafting yet on OS yet, Sirion.
Yeah.
There's no rune span.
No, I know.
So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, you look at these updates. These updates I just mentioned. EOC, ports, quest reworks, the Gielinor games, Alcarid rework, other city reworks, bonfires, RuneSpan. Those were building the foundation of what we have for modern RuneScape. And in reality... I think we're in a situation, or we were in a situation in 2013, where we didn't know what these updates were for. But now they're, I think, core to the identity of what is RS3. And you couldn't remove any of these without causing a major problem in the game. And I'm wondering...
The question I would like to ask on top of that is, like, you're saying we didn't know what they were for. The question is, did Jakex know what they were for, right?
Well, I mean, obviously the signature heroes were, and the quest rewards were to...
I mean, they were dropped, right? How many did we see the signature heroes after that year?
Yeah.
Very little.
And then the city reworks. We had Alcarid reworked.
We had a little... Yeah, I don't know what came after
Taverly,
that.
Taverly, Berthorpe, Lumbridge.
Oh, again? yeah, no.
Catherby, and then it stopped.
Yeah. No, I think at the time there was just, it was very unclear what the game was going to be about, right? Like, they had just kind of flopped DOC, right? They were scrambling. They couldn't really tell what the game was going to be about. Like, you have this combat system on one side, which wasn't really working out. But the rest of the game hadn't really changed. So I think it was just in this...
We also had the world event that summer, too, in 2013.
Yeah, like, I think there was a lot of, you know, grand promises, right? Like, grand schemes, grand announcements. And I think not all of them panned out as well as the players expected.
And if we extrapolate that back further, the reason they did that was to make RuneScape feel like a different MMO. They were trying to emulate WoW at the time, I think.
I mean, at the time, it was right in the middle of the phase where, you know, there was this... RuneScape was transforming from this browser-based game to a client game. Because I think, like, a lot of people forget that back in the day, RuneScape was played in the browser, right? Like, that was one of the reasons it grew so big.
Yeah.
But what that became one of the limiting factors. That was the thing that kept it back as well. They were trying to shed that, you know,
that image. Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it.
Like, I was playing RuneScape. It was not cool, right? Like, in school, it was really not cool to play RuneScape. And I think they were trying to sort of shed that image. They changed the combat system. They had the world events. You know, it became all big and cool. But, like, it wasn't going anywhere. And I can see why people sort of became disillusioned with it. Like,
the game
was changing under their feet without a clear vision.
Okay.
I can imagine why people are like, you know what? Give me the familiar thing. Give me the thing that I know that works.
So it wasn't just EOC, it was everything leading up to it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was the spirit of the time.
And I'm wondering where I landed on this, because, you know, I was 100% against OS at the time. And maybe it was because I was covering it weekly on the show in the way that we do, and I... Once again, you know, averse to change, didn't want to, you know, consider OS at the time. Tanis, where are you at on growing up RuneScape in 2012? I mean, did you have any of these feelings Sirion did?
Not as much. I mean, not in the same way. I mean, I was not a fan of EOC when it came out. I mean, as you can imagine, when it was a fixed interface, it made playing the game 100 times harder for me. Very difficult. Kind of surprised I made it through, but I did. But my major concern was, like, I didn't want to be losing out of development time. Like, that was my major issue. Looking back and seeing it from today, in today's perspective, I mean, it all worked out for the best, right? Like, those are players that we were able to keep that we otherwise wouldn't have. It was good for business. and I don't think it's taken too much away from, you know, from development, but going into it, there was too many unknowns, and I didn't know, you know, you couldn't know that. So that was where my fears and my apprehensions came from.
Yeah.
Especially because I was dealing with EOC, like I didn't like it any better than anyone else. And I felt like if I can deal with it, then what's everyone crying about?
Right. Like, right.
You know, right or wrong.
One thing I want to also say is, you know, all the grand vision and the, you know, trying to make RuneScape bigger and whatnot, 2012, 2013, to be fair, there was a great deal of wheel spinning and course corrections.
Wheel spinning.
What?
Yeah, that came to RS3 not too long afterwards, spinning a wheel.
That's right, that's another. Yeah, Squeal of Fortune was actually 2012 too, I believe.
Yeah, of course that didn't help with
no.
That didn't have anything to do. No, not at all.
Yeah, that factors into it as well. But you look at everything from this period then, from 2012, I want to say, through 2017, it culminates in 2017 trying the Menaphos expansion and the U-turn on that to finally set Jagex on the right foot in 2018 of tackling that unfinished business list and going back to actually producing, you know, these RuneScape-y feeling updates like Deep Sea Fishing, Clue Scroll Rework, Player Owned Farm, Safe Cracking, and so on and so forth. Did it really take 5 years to get back on track after this attempt to grow RuneScape and morph it into something it wasn't? Did it really take 5 years, 2013 to 2018?
It's going to be affirmative.
Because that's what it looks like here. Because I look at, sure, there was quality content and things that changed the game between 2012 and 2018. Well, 2013 and 2018. NXT comes to mind, of course. The quest, the six age arc and whatnot. But it feels like vision wise, we didn't get a cohesive vision until 2018, then later 2019 with Warden, and now the current vision with Mod Jack and Mod Keeper. Did it really take that long? Because if that's the case, I'm flabbergasted again.
I mean, I think RuneScape has, like RuneScape 3 specifically, has always suffered a little bit from the lack of, you know, uniform vision, like one clear goalpost.
Yeah,
that can be seen through the number of EPs and lead designers we've gone through the years, and each of them tried to pull the game in a different way. Which, I mean, it's expected, but also kind of problematic because I think it left a lot of the game sort of halfway there, and I still think that's the case.
You can still see it on the map. Walk from Yanil to Ardoin, and you're, you know, in 2012, but walk from Alcarid to, you know, Falador, and you're in modern era.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you still see that a lot, and there's a lot of unfinished business left. And I think the game suffered for it. And, you know, that only really matters if you're trying to take the game somewhere. And the advantage that Old School has had is that
they're not,
it's not really trying to get somewhere, right?
Yeah.
They're just trying to stay in the same place.
And
maybe a bit too much, right? Like that what we're just talking about. But
and then,
not to say you don't need strong leadership, but in a sense you don't, right? Like you can get away with just, you know, doing the things that are fun and that the players ask for. And
yeah, and you know, looking back at this on the perspective of just a timeline, I see from 2013. Through 2017, a series of course corrections and vision changes that really didn't culminate in much in terms of progress. Sure, like I said, we had good updates and such. But then somebody, I feel like I feel like one of the stamps that Mod Warden put on his EP when he came in when did he come in? 2019, summer 2019, was the last attempt to really, you know, try and shift RuneScape in a different direction, so to speak. And then after that, we have, of course, Mod Keeper, whose goal is to, in effect, provide that same RuneScape-y feeling, except modernize it with the modern lens on it, as has been the direction that Mod Jack has been taking the game this year and last year. So it's really interesting, I think, when you look at this, and when it took the discussion getting there to that point, and I want to talk about where we're at now. Is there anything else in the intervening years period you guys want to touch on before we talk about where we're at now?
No.
Okay. I have a big question of where we're at right now in 2023. Is RuneScape 3 succeeding, given everything we've discussed and where we've been, and the direction changes? And the thing that spurred this question was what you said, Sirion. Old school made their business by not changing. Has that been decided? Is that going to be a key aspect for RS3 as well, except with a different lens put on it, minus the polls?
It's a tough one, right? Like, to me, it sounds worrying when the people behind RuneScape say that their main focus is going to be retention and not acquisition.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do the math, you know, you can, where you never gain people, right? Even if you are 100% successful on retention, you'll never grow anymore, right? What you have today is what you'll keep. Now, RuneScape is one of these games that you don't quit, you only take extended breaks, right? Which is true. So you get sort of a cycle of people going through, but every time there's a chance that people don't come back. And so you're going to slowly lose people and deteriorate. And I can't say that the RS3 player base is big enough that it feels like they can just coast that until the end of times.
I think that what was said was that there's a consistent number of people who play RS3, but it rotates in and out all the time.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, I can't believe that this number is perfect, right? Like, if only, I mean, very gruesome maybe. If only because people die, right?
How old is our player base? Damn.
I mean, not. I mean, there are older people in there, right?
We're not spring chickens anymore, though.
I know,
like,
damn.
And there are people who are like looking at their phone all the time while playing RuneScape and walking on streets and getting hit by cars. I don't know. Like, overall, like you're going to lose players, right? That's a fact. You are going to lose players. You can't tell me it's 100% perfect people coming back.
It's like Star Trek Voyager.
It's like Leave It to Dutchman to come up with a rosy picture.
it's like Star Trek Voyager. After about 18 months, they knew they were going to have to be a generational ship if they didn't find any shortcuts. And as such, people started planning for that.
Yeah.
How is RuneScape planning to be a generational product? And aside from having RuneScape players start reproducing with each other?
It's not that kind of fantasy game.
Well, it's not RuneScape is not a dating site, Shane.
I know, but I've heard stories of that happening before.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure, yeah. That happens. And that's fine, but that's not how you're going to grow a community and keep it alive.
Like, exactly. That's my point.
That's not a sound business plan. So, you know, if you say, is RS3 successful? And if they're saying, well, it's basically on life support, we're just going to keep all the people who are currently playing happy and that's it, then no, it's not
right.
successful.
And see, this is the thing. And this is the thing. If we're in retention mode, how are you going to add those new players in? Stowe adds new players in every time a new season of a show starts.
Yeah, like that is sort of the thing. And the way that old school is doing this is by having like content creation being super you know, big and huge.
Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views sometimes.
Exactly. That's how you get people playing games. But yeah, like that, oh, RS3 doesn't really have that. Like even Fresh Start Worlds was meant to get existing players back. And
we don't know how it did.
We don't know
how
it did.
They haven't said a peep about it.
But at the same time, you know, it's, you already see sort of the defeat you get. Like, we've talked about this on the show before. The viable strategy for RuneScape is to find new markets. And to find new markets, you need to go to, you know, your India and your China and your Indonesia and your Nigeria.
And the thing is,
which
we
are
had,
all coming online.
And we had an EP who wanted to do this with mobile, but that seemingly fizzled out.
I mean, mobile fizzled out in general. So I think the strategy sort of went out of the window alongside with it. And, you know, I...
And this is why I wanted to do this episode, because in my eyes, it starts with old school and EOC. And we had wonderful things in that 10-year period, like the Elder God or the Sixth Age arc, like Priv, like NXT. But how did the game grow, and how did it get to a point where it set itself up for being able to seed these new players today? And that's the problem I see having right now if we're in retention mode.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it all goes back to 2012.
I mean, I don't disagree with anything Theron said. I mean, obviously, that is the best way, right? Like, to grow, bring in new players, totally would be plan A. I just don't think we've ever really been there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see new players being, I just don't see new players coming to the game.
And that's why we did the Altscape bit too, because you had the hunch that it's not going to be new players, it's going to be alt, so I turned that into a monthly bit.
Right. Yeah. And I still kind of, you know, I still think that. But I don't know if it's like a unique, I mean, I think what you do then is you play off, if you want to bring in new players, if you want to at least try, then you have to play off the IP, right? Like, no one is playing old Mario Brothers, but yeah, I could still see someone that
it's
was
a fun thing to play in a
young and first time ever playing Mario.
Yeah.
Like Mario Kart or something, yeah. Right? Like, because they play off the IP.
I mean, they just added a new DLC for that yesterday on Switch.
So, I mean, to me, that's, you know, I think of that, and I think, well, that might be the position we need to be in, where...
Right, and that's the thing. They haven't had success. They were reportedly going to try an ARPG, but now, as we understand it, it's a Valheim-esque survival-based game based on the post that was put out last year. And to my understanding, that's the only other ongoing project aside from RS touching the IP. We've had things on the periphery, of course, like RuneScape characters in Smite and the tabletop game. But that doesn't recruit players like a new game does. You guys all remember the hype that Valheim was when that first came out. And so many people messaged me when Valheim came out. They said, this is a survival-based game that is like RuneScape.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know me and Theron have disagreed in the past, but if Chronicle had hit a year or 2 years earlier, it would have been in the mix of things. It might not have been a great card game, but it would have been popular. Well, and it would have been at the time that was popular.
The reason
we're always 2 years late.
Right, and the reason it didn't feel like a great card game is it was started by 4 J-Mods at lunch.
Well, there's that, too.
And it didn't get the full support until it was, you know, well beyond its prototype stage, which is fair for a business that is risk-averse, dare I say it.
Yeah.
Right.
No, and
but we're always 2 years late. Like, it just seems like... I don't know. Sorry, Sarah.
I think that you just mentioned sort of the key word of this discussion, which is risk averse, right? I think Jagex is incredibly risk averse. In a sense.
We're going to have a huge discussion on that, and that's how I want to end the show. And it's a valid point, I think, because that's been, I think, the entire thing from 2012, right?
I mean, they're not necessarily very, like, calling a risk averse, I don't think it's doing them quite justice.
Okay.
Like they try new things, right? Like they come up with new ideas.
Yeah. Archaeology was wonderful.
They're lacking also a little bit in, you know, perseverance. Like they're trying out new things, and the moment they hit a hitch, the moment they ESC is not a success, they pull out old school. The moment that expansions are not a success, they're stopping doing expansions. The moment that, you know, all of these things, they hit a certain bump, right?
Like, they always need like a general pattern figure.
And they sort of go completely the opposite direction. Like that's how Rune Labs came to be. Oh, we did something wrong. Boom, Rune Labs. Let's go the older way. And I'm like, it feels like there needs to be more nuanced self-reflection there. So risk averse, maybe not the right word here. It's more like,
yeah, and I think that raises
they dip their toes, but like if the water is a little bit too cold, they just go and run straight to the sauna.
And I have a question for you guys. You mentioned that RS3 does try new things, and they don't push the envelope as much as I'd like, personally.
I mean, you can't, right? You can't just become a completely different game. Like, that's the problem with a living game. You're sort of dealing with this legacy.
And
at the same time, you know, they need to do things. They need to change things.
And I think, and, you know, my most fun time on the internet was back in, you know, 2005 to 2008, watching all these startups come in. Like, that was such a fun time when you had new companies.
I'm a little bit offended that the most fun time you had on the internet was before you met me, but okay.
No, I was going to say when we had, you know, new companies like Twitter and Dig and Facebook and all the modern juggernauts that of what was Web 2.0 at the time that took off, just that fun, go fast, break things, don't ask questions kind of attitude, right? And you know, there's a part of me that if I could, that's how I would run things. But I understand that when you're dealing with such a huge IP and something that is your core moneymaker, you can't do that. I understand that. What do you guys think was the most innovative, or maybe putting it this way, risky update of the last 10 years?
Risky update last 10 years? I think archaeology was risky. It had to be good. If it didn't, it might have sealed the future of new skills. Because you couldn't have had three new skills in a row with Dungeoneering, Div, Invention. If archaeology hadn't hit, it might not be having a new one this year.
All right. Sirion?
Yeah, I'm trying to think because there's a few different ones I'm thinking of, but the one that comes up to the front of my mind is the mining and smithing rework.
Ooh.
Not necessarily, like, I think they did a good job at beta testing it and making sure it was successful and all that. I think the risk there was the absolute massive amount of time investment that was involved with it. Right.
Yeah.
You can't just re-release the skills. They spend years, like literally years, on rebuilding those skills from the ground up. And there was no guarantee that the community was going to be okay with it. Right.
But even today,
the method they did, they went about it with the betas and getting a lot of feedback, and that went a lot better than EOC. I think they made the right steps to reduce risk, but on a whole, I think that was a super risky update, and there would have been a chance that people weren't waiting for that, then it would not have been successful.
All right. All right. And, you know, even today, it's always said that from the time investment, it wasn't worth, you know, putting the time into it. Sure, you got two great skills out of that, but at the same time, you could have built two new, entirely fresh skills with that and brought everybody in and, you know, maybe brought more people to the game with it. So, all right, I can see that. You know, in hindsight, I think the riskiest update that they did, and this proved itself over the last 10 years, was Menafos.
Yeah,
that was risky as well.
Because it was that shift to an expansion, but at the same time, there were other issues underpinning it that made
mid-level
it...
Mid-level content. Yeah, there's a lot of risk there.
That made it not hit the spot.
I mean, I think the risk there was that they got to a position where, you know, they took away a lot from the players. Like, there was no updates, right? Like, we definitely saw a reduction in the amount of content just being released. People got upset. People got grumpy because they weren't seeing any updates. It had to hit, right? Like, they had to be like, yeah, but it was all worth it. And then it came out, and it wasn't worth it.
Yep. That's why I put it
then
in that
what
column.
Do you do?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. U-turn, 180, is what they did.
Which I think, yeah, I think is wrong. I think they should have, you know, been more... I mean, a lot of it comes down to communication, right? Like, if they had said, you know what, you're going to get only half the updates per week because we're building up to this big expansion. Yeah, I think it would be fine. I think setting expectations and then afterwards be like, hey, you know, Manifest didn't hit the way we wanted to. We're going to spend some time fixing it. We're going to spend some time evaluating it. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think transparency here is key, but at the same time, admitting failure is always problematic in companies.
The most conservative, or maybe, I don't want to say stagnant, but the most conservative, least risky update of the last 10 years. I'm just going to go out right on the limb and say this was Prif, based on how it was carried out and that people had wanted it for a decade plus. Prif was going to be successful.
No, I don't think it was the least risky update, because Prif is something that a lot of people had a lot of time to think about what they would expect from it. And any update that involves expectations is very dangerous.
True, that's true for a normal player, but for me, I was just happy to walk in the door.
Yeah, no, but like, I think a lot of people had certain expectations, and I think there were people that complained about Prif, right? Like, I think it wasn't a one-hit success, by no means. So, no, I don't think it was the least risky update.
What was your least risky then? Or do you want me to go to Tannis first?
I have no idea.
Tannis?
Any boss in the last 10 years? Pick one.
Because, and you're probably right on that, because that's where the RuneScape 3 content creator base is and streamer base is for the most part. The majority of RuneScape 3 content and streamers are PBM. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, just as we saw with the death cost rework and the Ring of Death changes, that becomes the prevailing opinion of the community, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, I think in general, like, a smaller update is almost by definition less risky.
Sure.
Because, you know, the time investment is lower. So, you know, a quest is almost always going to be a success, right? Like, there's going to be people loving it, and the people who don't love it, no harm done, right?
Sliskay's like, endgame.
No, but like if you're talking about a low stakes quest, right? Like, nobody is going to care a lot negatively.
Sure.
Unless it's one small favor to or Elemental Workshop 5.
I'm smiling right now.
Yeah, I know. Like, people responded negatively about the giant slime quest, right? But what harm did it do in the end?
Yeah,
people were upset with the quest, mostly. Mostly because it was the only update that month.
Yes. God. Yeah. 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 That's right. That's right. People were also upset.
If that had just been a little thing together with a boss, it would have been forgettable.
People were also.
A bunch of people who would have laughed their ass off because it's funny. And that's it, right? Like, I mean, we've been playing through some of these old school quests, and they're just super silly and
they're
dumb
fetch quests at their core with a little bit of humor.
They're fetch quests. They don't take themselves seriously, right? Like, they wouldn't stand up to modern day RS3 standards. But I'm having a good time with them, and at the worst case, I feel indifferent.
Yeah. Okay. And then this raises the big question, does RS3 need to up its innovation game and as a whole? And I initially framed this as, is Jagex risk averse, but what was the frame you wanted to go with on this one, Sirion?
I mean, I think they need to persevere a little bit more on their ideas, build a little bit more confidence, be willing to take, to do things a second time. And I think we're seeing that, right? Like, we saw that with the Elder God Wars, they tried something new, right? That was new. They had a lot of lessons to base themselves on, but the Pontifex thing, right, was sort of the item that went through. Then they went with the Inferno Puzzle Box. They learned lessons from that, and now we're seeing the fort. Like, you're seeing them evolve more on previous ideas. Whereas before, it was, every 6 months, a completely new approach and a new playbook and a new, whatever. And I think that's good, because you're seeing that by not having to worry too much about reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
They are starting to think about the content more. And we actually start seeing, hey, there's a gap in the construction skill. Let's fix it.
Or the farm and curb stuff last year. And that's one of the things that I'm most happy about with the way Mod Keeper has moved things on and Mod Jack wound up as lead designer. It feels like the lessons from the Warden era are at least carrying on, right? Whereas you couldn't say that with all the other course corrections that happened between, 2012 and 2018, I feel.
Exactly. Like, if you are slowly drifting off your course in a boat, you're not going 180 degrees. No, you're just course correcting, right?
And you're not doing 180s too.
No, you're not doing 180s, because then you're just driving or sailing in circles.
Whereas previously, it would have.
Which is kind of what we had.
They would have
right?
done that at times. In
yeah,
the
but
past,
it's just right? kind of what we had. If you look back at like the period from like 2013 to 2018, 2019, it was just flying in circles.
Exactly, and that's the point I wanted to make here, and I guess answer the question. And I thought we were going to get to a different answer than we did, but it seems like that has been largely corrected, and what's left is my personal desire, like I said. I like watching when, we get to do fun things, and there's, like I said, like the early era of the internet when, all the companies like Twitter and Facebook and Ding and Reddit and all those guys were coming up and young, and there's something new each and every week. But I understand that we can't do that anymore. But I think from this discussion it's clear that at the end, Jagex has probably learned something from this last decade. Tanis, how do you feel about where we're at on the whole risk-averse thing?
I think we're in an ebb right now. I think during Mod Warden's reign, there was a little bit less of it. I think we're a little more cautious right now. But actually, if that brings me more content like Fresh Start, where we're able to use and capitalize on what we're good at, I'm kind of okay with it. But I do think Sirion's right. It's not so much they're afraid to try something; they're afraid to stick with something that they try if there's any inkling of pushback whatsoever. Once again, Fresh Start is a good example of that.
And they did push back on that at the beginning. And, you know, to be fair, we did get some feedback in the comments that we, on our Fresh Start retrospective, didn't address the FOMO aspect of when the capes and such are going to come back, and the membership through bonds. Those were things that were a result of community feedback. And if they didn't do those, people would have, you know, had to pay with real money. And I think we can all agree, coming out of Fresh Start, one of the things that we still have today with that is the bond membership codes that can be bought and such. So maybe it's not, and like you said, it's not so much, you know, just reversing, but course correcting subtly, as you said, Sirion. But at the same time, how do we trust the community management team to be relaying all the information and signals from the community at large to Jagex and bringing those things forward? And I feel like that could be a loaded question in itself at this point.
Well, that's why I do feel that your community look, I know not everyone plays RuneScape. I don't expect everyone to play, but I feel like a community management, it would be a benefit, because you could look at all this feedback that's coming in, and I'm sorry, some feedback is great, some feedback isn't worth typing it out.
Yeah.
So they can kind of be able to sift through that a little bit better. You know what I mean? Like, they could have looked at that and been like, oh, bonds, tradable bonds. Oh, yeah, that's important. But they also could have looked at, oh, we don't need to cut these rates. It's absolutely fine. It's fine. They just don't know how fun it is yet. You know what I mean? I feel like you need somebody that can kind of sift through that and know, you know, what's what.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, this is, once again, this is the wonderful part of this podcast. I didn't anticipate for us to be where we are right now in terms of discussion. I feel better coming out of this than I did going in. So that's positive. I want to highlight that the company's largest player base is in old school, which doesn't rock the boat. And I'm wondering, how much of that ideal of not rocking the boat are they applying to RS3 and the company as a whole?
Yeah. Well, also, by the way, listeners, if you've ever wondered and wanted to get in on our monthly bits, a lot like this right here, complete with revelations and everything, right, Shane?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they have realized in a part that comes back to the retention mode, right? Like, even if you don't take the retention mode literally, I think they're realizing that in this day and age, finding new players is hard, right? It's relatively hard. There's so much competition, and for a game as RuneScape, like RuneScape, which, you know, requires a pretty significant time investment, it's hard to get out there. So I think there's a certain brand loyalty that they're relying on, and you can't really have brand loyalty if you treat the brand, well, I don't want to say without respect, but if you're changing too much too fast, you know, you're going to lose people faster. So I think there's some sense of, you know, we have this bunch of people that we, you know, attach to us. If they're still around, they're probably pretty passionate about it. At the same time, you know, there's a certain game they like. We shouldn't try to be a different game.
And maybe
make a different
from,
game instead, right?
Yeah, and maybe from that perspective, maybe that's why it appears as though that they're in retention mode and why they have to be like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it comes across to me. But if you think about it, you know, a little bit more.
Everything I know about business, that doesn't look like a good business strategy.
Exactly. But maybe it's just this idea of, we have these people and want to keep them happy because that's the core of our player base. That's like,
yeah,
you know, And that's true, right? Like a player that has just started playing 2 weeks ago, you can try and keep them happy, but they haven't, like, the chance that they belong to that group of players that sticks around for years is much lower than somebody who has been playing like 2 years already. Like,
yeah.
If you're around for 2 years, you're probably going to be around for 5 years, right? Whereas if you're around for a week, you're not going to necessarily be around for a month. Because that's like the runoff at the start is really fast.
Yeah, you are an unproven commodity at that point.
Exactly. No, that's it. Like, yeah. you the first few minutes, hours, days are the most important ones. So I can agree with them, and they say, you know, the players who have already been playing for a year, you know, they are the most important ones. They are the ones we should keep playing the game. Because if we lose those, we need to try and find people in that other group again. And yeah, they're a lot more fickle.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that explains how Jagex operates with RS3 and Old School. And I think the only outstanding question here for us at this point at the end of the segment, because that's where we are, is how do you grow even further? And maybe they don't need to because they're a private company, but if they were a publicly traded company on the stock market, they would need to have a plan for that and show that. And I feel like that's the big question that needs to be answered going forward, and we don't have answers for that today. I'd be interested to hear what other people have to think on this. Because it's an interesting topic, so to speak. How does Jagex grow itself going forward? And ooh, maybe this could be another topic for another monthly bit going forward. Obviously, you guys get the actual, you know, you get the good discussion here, the full discussion about RuneScape as it is today on the main show. But we're going to continue this discussion on another monthly bit at some point in the future. You guys have anything else before we move on to our achievables of the week?
What a guy just putting a paywall in front of the interesting bit. Jeez.
Hey, it's not even produced yet, so I don't even know if it will be interesting.
I mean, I'm thrilled. Like, I think everybody got a look behind the paywall for what a monthly bit is kind of like, because we got into that pretty deep.
Yeah, well, there's a specific reason I requested Sirion here for this, because I know you and I could have done this, but we needed to add in a third factor.
Well, absolutely.
So. All right. Achievements this week. Oh, boy. Okay. Tannis on the 9th. You got 120 smithing. Congratulations.
Yay. Thank you.
Ty Oasis got 120 runecrafting on the 8th. Congrats.
We have Alific getting 99 divination on February 7th. Lord Dustia getting 120 woodcutting on February 5th. And Aliosif getting 120 farming on February 3rd.
Nice, nice, nice.
Okay, and then to finish off, we have Keski with 120 thieving on the 3rd. And Such XP Waste with 99 magic on the 3rd.
Such XP waste. Alrighty. Sirion, you have a pick of the week for us.
Yeah, I'm going to try and keep this really brief because last time I did a pick of the week, Shane just cut me out of the show. So the pick of the week this week is a book, but also a movie called Dune. It's a sci-fi classic. You might have heard of it. And I wanted to recommend it. I watched the movie after a friend of mine kept bothering me and pestering me until I finally watched it. And I quite like the movie. It's very atmospheric. But it does a really good job at introducing the universe. The soundtrack is amazing. The cinematography is spot on. But I like the story, so I started reading the book, and like you hear with Lord of the Rings, right? Like, it's one of those tough books to get through, Dune is a little bit like that. There's a lot of internal monologuing. Okay. There's a lot of new terms being brought in. But I thought having watched the first movie sort of helped me ground things a bit more quickly.
So I should watch the movie first if I ever read this.
Yeah, I think it helps sort of make things a little bit easier to understand. I don't think you need to, but it for me it helped, and I don't think it takes away from the book that much. It's a pretty good adaptation. Like, it stays pretty close to the book. So, you know, all in all, I'm really enjoying it. I'm like that this is clever sci-fi, right? Like, so much of modern-day television and books and movies is optimized for simple reading.
Even some of the modern Star Trek is like that.
There's layers upon layers upon layers. The characters are super interesting. There's some commentary hidden in there on, you know, religion and politics and all that kind of stuff. It is, you know, it doesn't try to be preachy about it, but it does a pretty good job at, you know, highlighting how these things can be used. And it is also pretty agnostic about what's good or bad. Like, that line is pretty blurry in the book, and I just love that, right? Like, it's an exploration of human psychology in a sci-fi setting.
You're right. You said there's aspects of this I would like, and I can see why when you're saying this now.
Yes. Also, the highest group of people in charge of this galactic empire is called the Landsraad. Yes, that's a Dutch term. So I was like, yeah, of course the Dutch colonized space, and that's why. but no, like, actually, like, the names, like, the offer is, like, pretty clever. Like, the names, like, all the different houses, they're rooted in different, you know, Earth cultures. Another really interesting thing is that there's no AI.
Ooh,
yeah, okay. And there's a reason for that. And
there's a reason for that that becomes apparent. But, like, computers are not really a thing, which leads to all kinds of interesting things. And it's not a gimmick, right? Like, it makes sense. It's plausible. I would say give the book a try, but definitely watch the movie. They're both amazing. I can't wait to read the entire series of books. I mean,
they're good.
Definitely
they're
good.
They're yes. Very, very good. Shane, I think you would also like the way that certain characters are, well, let's just say they're special, and they have ability. Like, yeah, they don't have AI because they actually have, you know, I. They're super intelligent, and the way that they can figure out and mentally break things down is pretty cool.
I'm glad that, like, we didn't go with festival. I'm glad that we didn't go with the general AI pick of the week, since that's been in the news this week.
Yes.
Now I have to know though, Therion.
Yes.
When you talk about the movie, are you talking about the one with David Bowie from the 80s?
No, I'm talking about the 2021 movie.
Okay, which is a better movie. It is. Yes. If you like a campy laugh at fun.
Yes.
David Bowie was all right too.
yes. No, this is the movie that doesn't have Patrick Stewart with an eye patch.
I forgot about Patrick Stewart. Yes. How could I?
The movie is pretty loyal to the book. The sequel, like, the first movie actually only tells the first half of the first book. The sequel is coming out sometime this year. I am planning, like, normally I don't care, but I am planning on watching that in an IMAX cinema, because that's how good the sound design and the cinematography of this movie is. Like, it is worth that price of admission 10 times over.
Yeah.
All right.
Very cool. The world building is what really...
Oh, God, yes.
I mean...
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I could... I could continue. We could make a monthly bit about this, right? And I would still not be done talking by the end of it.
Maybe that's something we get you and Thaxi on then. Patreon,
RSD&D, and I have not even. I'm not even halfway the first book, right? I'm not even halfway the first book. That's how good it is. That's how much there is. So I just had to put this as a pick of the week out there because people need to give it a chance.
All right. Thank you. Tanis, what have you been up to on RS this week?
Well, 120 smithing. Yay.
Time for 200 mil.
You know, I'm not doing 200 mils until I get 120 all. So started doing some wood cutting, switching between,
bless you,
you know, golden bamboo and elder.
Yeah,
runs.
Yeah. I found that elders, especially with all the upgrades and the fire torch and whatnot, are about where magics were before all those. So they're manageable. They're manageable.
Well, I mean, I'm doing them just because I've gotten so many of those special arrow tips that if I do elders, then that's going to be almost like free fletching 120, right? So
okay, that's a good
that's
way
why
of
we're
kind of
working, yeah. And other than that, the with my fresh start is still active, even though he's not so fresh anymore. He's the not so fresh starter, but got filled up a room.
He needs to take a bath by now, right?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, the not so fresh, but filled up his Slayer dungeon and have him working on some combat skills. So yeah, about it though. Oh, and I picked up Hogwarts Legacy today. So I'm,
oh, that's where everyone's going to be over the weekend then, because I think that comes out when, the 9th.
It comes out tomorrow, okay. But I bought the DLC so I can play it when we're done here.
Okay, fair. As for me, been doing dailies on RS3, got stuff, stocking up on planks for next week. That, as you can tell, that was a quick reaction to the live stream yesterday, but dailies on RS3, and on the old school side, enjoying rooftop agility, interestingly enough. Pushing for level 25-ish on that right now.
I told you.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad.
It is really nice and chill. Like, I was just like, yeah, especially with like the highlights. It's just, I don't even have to pay attention. It's just, yeah.
Aside from that, thieving there and it's dig site and other things we're going for too, right?
Dig site and Ghosts Ahoy. Yes.
Yeah. We're building a foundation that's gonna involve magic for teleports, teleports that go to specific farm patches and whatnot. That's my focus, as you can probably tell. Just a whole bunch of questing. Last weekend was Black Knight's Fortress.
The one with the super powerful cabbage that wrecks the plan of the
Black Knights. See, these are just early free to play fetch quests, and we're, you know, just banging them all off on the list one by one by one.
Yes.
And then into the members quests after
and
that.
And we did Recruitment Drive as well, which you did twice in the end.
Because I died.
Yeah.
I died with 25 hit points because the RNG of the combat system was not kind to me. But yeah, it's an interesting experience. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I know the thing I miss the most, and Tanis can emphasize with this, is probably the nice visuals and whatnot of NXT. But Runelite with the graphics client and the ability to set a custom skybox gets us kind of the way there, and UI scaling and whatnot. So it's an interesting experience nonetheless. Definitely going to be there for the questing side. I can already say I don't like the combat that much compared to what we have in RS3, as we said earlier. But I'm going to turn it over to you, Sirion, and you can say what you've been up to if there's any major differences in our old school stuff for this week.
No, not really. Like getting the skills up. I had most of my skills up already, so I've been going to the Lumbridge and Draenor Diary. Lots of quality of life stuff you get from like the task diaries that you're so used to having. Especially because, you know, getting around with lodestones is not a thing. You're like, oh, I'll just like Explorer's Ring and Ardoian Cave, all this stuff. Nope, still have to earn all of that. So getting my way to there, been a bunch more agility training. Like you said, it's kind of nice. So, yeah. Gort started a little bit on farming, but then all my plants died, and I'm like,
yeah, I'm waiting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But. And a bunch of mostly fire making, but wood cutting is coming along just fine because I'm just cutting all my own logs. So
nice. Nice.
Yeah, 99 fire making is definitely up there on the list of things to achieve as well.
Wonderful.
Why? Because the cape has a nice collar. I don't know. It's not like the skill is useful.
Less in old school.
Exactly. But yeah, no. But I'm looking forward to the next quest, and I've been sort of all these skills like agility and stuff. I've just been poring over the old school wiki, just looking for things and realizing how much stuff there is that I sort of missed because I played through most of these quests while I was much younger
and learning
using guides in Dutch. So like, this is actually the first time I'm playing some of these quests for real in English. So, but also just sort of looking at training methods and potential paths to do quests and all the strategizing. I didn't get that to do all of that for Fresh Start Worlds. So I get to sort of belatedly still strategize and do all that.
Yeah.
So I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, that's it for this week's update, folks. We'll be back next week discussing the new foundations, Fort 4 and 3 construction update. But if you want that episode delivered automatically to you when it arrives, just subscribe on any number of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Amazon, Stitcher, and more at update.show/subscribe. We're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. That's where we post the nibbles and the video versions of the show as well. And if you like the content you see there, give us a like and subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update, discussing things in RS3, despite what we said about our old school updates. So with that being said, see you next week, everyone. Take care.
Bye.
See you.